Bart Cop. The audience is listening.
I rarely read the Tulsa paper just because it's produced by Diddle Monkeys and most of it is what color did they paint the fire hydrants this week and a dog was shot on 9th Street and, you know, there's a car wreck where no one got hurt on 14th Street and it's just bullshit news. Who cares? But now and then I peer through the letters to the editor to see if there's anything I can make some hay with on the radio. So a pretty good letter. Like to hear it. Here you go. President not pro-life. As I write this letter, the death toll from the recent tsunami disaster stands at more than 155,000 dead. Bush said it is beyond his comprehension to think how many lives have been lost, and that he is particularly troubled to learn that many of the deaths were young children, and we grieve for their families, their moms and dads, who are heartsick. It is interesting that he feels such empathy for those families and yet shows little concern for the more than 100,000 innocent civilians who have been killed in Iraq because of his folly, 70% of whom are women and children. Apparently, he feels that when people die a few dozen a day, rather than all at one time, the impact of such a tragedy on individual families is somehow diluted. The American people have become numb to the daily death toll of Iraqi civilians, just as they have to the deaths of our brave soldiers who are daily being killed in Iraq. These tragedies become minimized when the president of the mightiest nation on earth not only initiated the slaughter and devastation, but is paying for it in our name. That's right, he's using our tax dollars that mean you work, we work, they deduct some money out of our check, and Bush uses it to kill 100,000 innocent Iraqi children and women, and we just take it. George W. Bush hypothetically calls himself pro-life because of his political pandering to the religious right. He is anything but. Signed, Barbara Santee, who's a big-time Democrat here in Tulsa. That is true. We got us a crazy monkey. And the press won't call it. The Democrats won't call it. A couple of websites will. A couple of foreign news, well, all the foreign newspapers are. We are just so lost. You know, I remember a time just a couple of years ago when our biggest problem was what are we going to do with the surplus? And Monica, those were the two biggest problems America had 5 years ago. Now look at the situation we're in. And the press just loves Bush. God, he can do no harm. He is absolutely perfect. He's godly Bush, here, sent here to save us from the Clinton disaster. And people love him. What the hell is wrong with people?
You say your name is?
Jack.
Never done Jack.
Glad to meet you. Who's your friend?
Don't say Dick.
What do you know? And you, friend, what's your handle?
Don. Just thumbs down.
Riding on their own chairs, they dream of wealth and fame. Fears get them anger. Nintendo. Jack and two thumbs down and psychic, don't say Dick. We're laughing at others' failures, though they have not done shit.
I've heard of you. The ready-made, connecting with the ever-ready. Yeah, never was talking about, still trying. I got it. Forever bitter, gossiping about, never say die. May I inquire what you've been doing, Mr.
Jack?
Never done Jack.
And you, partner, what's the news of the world, Dick?
I don't say Dick.
Don, of all the people, you must be the tattler.
Two thumbs up!
What are you afraid of? Failure. So am I.
Has been
implies failure. Not so. Has been's history. Has been. Was. Has been.
whether you like it or not, there's a lot of politics in sports. And as a rule, maybe not as a rule, but oftentimes, when I talk about sports, we're talking about the politics of it. My problems with Tiger Woods include the fact that he uses his position as one of the most influential black people in the country, and he's doing the opposite of what the black heroes before him have done. He's taking Whitey's money and telling people to just let go, just don't worry about it, just let the status quo be what it is, and you just never you mind, I'm getting my $100 million, you can just wait around. Tell you what, if you want to get a piece of the pie, why don't you become the best golfer in the world, and then you can be like me. Otherwise, go to hell. I don't like it when he says that to blacks and women and minorities. So yeah, that's an example of how politics gets into sports. So if you have just a second, I wanted to tell you about Randy Moss. Now, I don't understand this. There's so much I don't understand. I can only blame the idiots who are telling the story. There are some things, I don't know if it's before or after this, but the airlines, that's something I don't want to get into. I don't have time. But this right here, I got time just because it's so simple. And nobody, start off with Randy Moss made the severe mistake of his career last week. This is recorded the 10th, so this would be on January 2nd. He played in a football game, and do you know what Randy Moss did? Oh, before I tell you what this master criminal did, when he takes off his helmet, he's got an afro bigger than Huey on Boondocks. Swear to God, if you haven't seen this guy, which is fine, I kind of like it. I don't know if he's doing it because it's cold up in Minnesota or if he's just got a statement there. And I'm not sure exactly when it's proper to use the word nappy, if a white person can use that, but when he takes off his helmet, his hair goes out maybe 8 inches or so. It is just, you're going, my God, is that under his helmet? You just really, it's striking. I mean, we've all seen, you know, the afros of the 70s and that. This thing is just huge, and it's a little unkempt. I don't know if he's doing a Rasta thing or what's going on, but anyway, I'm sure the hairdo scares Whitey to effing death. I'm sure the hairdo has got a lot to do with this. But anyway, last week, this man with the big hair, you know what he did? He walked off the field with 2 seconds left on the clock. I mean, he might as well have just blown up an airplane full of children and orphans. He walked off the field with 2 seconds left. Now, they all acted like this was just, oh my God, how they couldn't believe it. The monkeys, the fox monkeys, they were sitting around, they just couldn't believe it. The most massive, immature, uncalled for, terrible thing. My God, how could he, 2 seconds early, are you kidding me? They just couldn't believe it. They all, you go from channel to channel, they were all talking about it. He left 2 seconds early. I have no the hell idea what that means. If Minnesota had the ball and they had to play one more play and they couldn't find him because he was in the shower, now, yeah, I think that's probably not a good thing. And, yeah, so fine him $10,000. But for this to be the crime of the century, I mean, Scott Peterson got nothing on this guy. He left 2 seconds early. It's hard to figure out what the problem is. Now, if they didn't have the ball, and since he plays offense, he's not going to be on the field, and we aren't talking about 2 seconds. We're not talking about he left in the second quarter. Now, see, both concepts have a two, but there's a difference between leaving in the second quarter and 2 seconds before the game's over. But in either way, it seems like a very, very damn small thing. And Randy Moss has a reputation. I'm not trying to act like he's Mr. Gold coming into this. I don't understand this either, but he was involved in some kind of car thing where he was in his new hot rod, and he was trying to go up a street that the police had blocked off, and he said, I'm Randy Moss, and I said, we don't care who you are. And he said, well, I'm going anyway. And the officer, I think, jumped on the hood of his car or something like that. To like, oh, he tried to run down the cop, which, you know, had to be white. The way I remember the story is the cop wasn't hurt at all. The cop ended up on the hood of his car, and oh, they made a big thing out of it. But he's Randy Moss. He's one of the two or three best receivers in the world, so they let him get away with a lot of that. But so, yeah, Randy's got these problems. He also said maybe this year, last year, he didn't feel like playing. And I don't know if that came out wrong, or I know what it's like to have a bad knee. So if someone said, hey, Bart, we want you to run out there when it's 9 degrees and get hit really bad by a 300-pound dude, I'm like, sorry, but I got a really bad knee. You know, I don't know if NFL athletes are allowed to say that. If you don't know if your knee's going to support you or not, do you want to be out on the field? Aren't you doing your team a disservice if you can't do the job and they say we want you to do, you know, whatever. But this all leads up to what he did yesterday. Oh, my God. This was the most terrible thing ever. I wish I had a list. It would be funny. Boy, if I had a staff, I would have them research what everybody said about this. They just went down the line. I think one person, I can't think of who it is, I think one person said, oh, come on, it's not that big a deal, but everybody else piled on. I know Joe Buck was calling the game live. What happened? Randy scored a nearly impossible touchdown. He had the bad ankle. He ran whatever to the corner. Seemed like it was 40 or 50 yards. A huge play. He might have been double covered, but anyway, he's one of the best there is, and he ran his ass off to the corner, grabbed a ball that was damn hard to catch, and it was a big thing for him. So he kind of did a little dance, and then he went over by the goalposts, and he pretended he was mooning the crowd for just a second. He kind of, there's a picture of it on page 2C of Monday's paper. He bent over and he real quick put his hands behind his waist and ran his hands down like to the back of his knees. And the Fox guys, they said, oh my God. Oh, we are so sorry that happened on our live broadcast. Oh my God. They acted like he just whipped it out and just went up and down the aisles, shaking it in the women's faces. No, that's not exactly what happened, Joe. He did a little silly, yeah, stupid, immature thing, but, you know, he just scored a touchdown. I'm not condoning it. I'm saying, as crimes go, this is right to me, right up there with leaving 2 seconds early. But they just went on and on and on about it. The whole Fox crew had a cow. Well, first you got your people calling the game. That's three guys. And then when they go back to the studio, that's four. So you got seven guys who just cannot believe. They went from guy to guy. I thought it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. Oh, yeah, I think it's here somewhere. It was the worst thing I'd ever seen in the history of sports. Who said that? But someone said it was the worst thing they had ever seen on a television or in a game or something. Oh, please. Now, take all that and put it over here. Okay, now let's talk about the first 2 minutes, I believe, of this season on Monday Night Football. You saw the pictures of it on the page back in, I guess, September. They had the, what did I call her? The Jerry Rice of the ladies on the Desperate Housewives show. Her name is, she's on Knots Landing. I don't have time. But anyway, she's probably early 40s. When ABC opened up their Monday Night season, they had this lady walk up to the young Mandingo Warrior-looking guy, Terrell Owens, in his green uniform for the Phillies. Philadelphia Eagles, I guess it's all the same. But anyway, she walked up to him with a towel, and that's all wrapped around her, and she said something to him. I didn't see it. I just saw the stills. And she said something to him, and she whipped the top off, and I believe jumped into his arms. Now, that was sanctioned and broadcast by the NFL. You know, there's also the age difference there. You got your older white woman throwing herself at the young black Mandingo warrior. If you're going to carry the slave analogy, it looked like the lady of the ranch, or however that works in the old days, ordered the head slave to do her. I don't know who saw the Mandingo movie 20, 30 years ago with Ken Norton, who beat up Ali, broke his jaw. In that movie, I forget the little blonde, might have been Susan George, said, Mandingo warrior, take me, take me. He said, oh, no, I don't want Massa to be mad if I do his wife. And she said, if you don't do me, I'm going to tell him you did. So if you're going to get in trouble for it either way, you might as well do me. And boy, he didn't have to tell Ken Norton twice. He was all over her. When a older white woman throws herself at a younger black man, this is how they saw it. I don't know a lot about slave history. That was a big thing. And from the outroar and outrage and all that, you know, saying, oh, just like another Janet Jackson. I still think the Janet Jackson thing could have been an accident. I don't know what in Janet Jackson's past led her to become the epitome of all bad behavior sexually on television. I don't know, somehow I just can't see her begging for that title. But anyway, when you compare the NFL ordering up, or at least approving, the little skit where the older white woman demands the young black Mandingo do her, now compare that with a little playful pretend mooning of the crowd. I don't know. I think the pretend mooning is a much smaller crime, unquote, than having the older white woman make the demands of the young black stud. And what's real possible is that is the NFL home office, whatever, the head office, they decided, yes, that Terrell Owens thing with the girl, that was a bit over the line. What the hell were we thinking? And at that point, they ordered everybody for no one, no sex. We stay away from that, you know. And then when Randy Moss did this, maybe the guys overdid it and felt like, oh, we've got to say, oh, we've got to condemn. Oh, this is the most outrageous thing, the worst thing I've ever seen in a football game ever. Please. I was thinking the other day, Jack Tatum hit Daryl Stingley in the back of the neck, and he's not walking anymore. You're trying to tell me a pantomime of a mooning is worse than a fella, an athlete never being able to walk again? There are worse things you can see in a football game besides this fella, and I promise it's the big hair. So it'd be interesting to hear a little feedback from you on that. I imagine a lot of you, especially the guys, saw the game. But mooning someone is hardly a rarity, from what I understand. And so for him to pretend to do it, they asked him about it. He said, "Oh, just having a little fun." He said, "If I offended somebody, I'm sorry. I got a little carried away. I was having some fun." To me, the story should end right there. But no, they got to keep going and keep going and keep going with it. Even though the league authorized the Mandingo thing, I think we got us a case of whorism. And that's another reason how politics got into sports, made it worse. Of course, after that rant was over, then I found the other article that had everything I was looking for. So let me run through this real quick. Firestorm surrounding Moss about to get hotter after on-field antics. Oh, no. The NFL talking TV heads have been hammering Moss, an easy mark for TV types wanting to sound hard-hitting. But when Moss, on a bad ankle, made a fourth-quarter touchdown grab, he became a man every media mouth will have to chew on this morning. After scoring, Moss mimicked dropping his pants and mooning Packer fans. Oh, the horror. Now, this is Michael Heistand of USA Today. Sounds to me like a rare breath of fresh air. He doesn't see the crime of the century here. There's not 1,350 dead soldiers here. Let's all get outraged about this and let Bush go with the war. Sure, that's how things work now. This Michael Heistand writes, "Oh, the horror. Joe Buck managed to react instantly. That's a disgusting act by Randy Moss, and it's unfortunate we had it on our air live. Oh, poor Joe Buck. Does Joe Buck still have his sight? Anyone know? Did he go blind after witnessing this?" It wasn't replayed until Fox's postgame show, where the network chose to air a taped interview where Moss said he didn't mean no harm and used a profanity Fox bleeped out. Well, he said, "We kicked some ass." Now, Jimmy Carter said that in 1980, early in 1980, they said, "Mr. President, what are you going to do if Teddy Kennedy gets in the race?" And he said, "I'll kick his ass." Now, that was 24 years ago. It was said by a president. So 24 years later, a black man dares to use the word ass on TV. Oh, it's a profanity. Oh, he had to bleep it out. What if the children heard that word? My God, how could they be expected to learn? How could they grow up having their minds destroyed that way? NFL TV announcers already were steaming during the weekend about Moss walking off the field before time expired in a loss to the Redskins a week earlier. "Reprehensible," said Boomer Esiason on CBS. There's nothing that you could do that's worse, said Steve Young, who's got to be a fuck monkey. Can you believe that? Sorry about my profanity, but a pretend dropping trowel is the worst thing you could possibly do? Steve Young, what are you, stupid? Good Lord, what is wrong with your head? Do you not have any kind of sense of proportion in your mind at all? ESPN's Mike Ditka would make Moss, quote, "stay in the bleachers during games." I kind of took it he was just giving the finger to his head coach. Now, how do you draw that line? What if a guy scores a touchdown, does a little dance, he's giving the finger to his coach? God, do you think Ditka and Steve Young and Boomer Esiason would know a little thing about sports? Or is this a racial thing? How dare the Negro act like that? I knew there was one guy that had it right. CBS's Shannon Sharp didn't sing along Sunday with TV's Greek Chorus. An ex-receiver who said he left games early, Sharp suggested it was a big deal only because Moss was caught. "I don't look at Moss differently now. He's one of the five top players in the NFL. Moss on Fox's pregame show said he knew it was wrong, but on ESPN, Fox's Terry Bradshaw said Moss, quote, just flat out doesn't care. Fox's Jimmy Johnson, oh, I loved to hate him when he was coach of the Cowboys. Oh, when he got a bad call, when he lost, he would stamp his foot and he'd swing his arms around and he'd scream at the referee and get all red-faced. That was some of the best TV I ever had. Jimmy Johnson said, enough is enough is enough. Can't anybody control this Negro with the hair? My God, what can a nation do about a tragedy? This ongoing tragedy. My God, he's going to be on TV next weekend too. Oh my God, what are we going to do with the children? Oh my God.
Oh,
Okay, here we got a little more politics and sports. Let me get your feedback on this. The headline in the paper is, where do series-ending balls wind up? Here's a solution to the controversy around ownership of the baseball that recorded the final out of the Boston Red Sox World Series win, donated to the Hall of Fame, is what Mel Antonin says of USA Today. The Red Sox wanted to display the ball, but their first baseman, Doug Mankiewicz, who caught the final out to give the Red Sox their first World Series since 1918, has it in a safe deposit box because he wants to sell it. Major League Baseball says Mankiewicz owns the authenticated ball, but anything else is between the two parties. Neither side was available Sunday. Hall spokesman Jeff Sumlin wouldn't comment, but there are interesting notes about World Series baseballs go. The only baseball in Cooperstown, that's where the Hall of Fame is from 1903. The ball that ended the Florida Marlins World Series 2003 title against the Yankees is still in Marlins pitcher's Josh Beckett's glove, and that's under his bed at home. The ball that rolled through the legs of Bill Buckner, who we talked about last show, in Game 6 of the 86 World Series, was picked up by umpire Ed Montague, given to New York Mets traveling secretary Arthur Richman, there you go, at your chain of command, who sold it at an auction in 1992 to Charlie Sheen for $93,000. So, who owns the ball? Apparently this thing is not settled up front, which is kind of dumb. You'd think, how many hundreds of years of baseball are you going to need before somebody sets a precedent? You know, in the old days, back in college, we used to play this funny kind of poker. It was called 333, and it's a game where you deal the cards out kind of like blackjack, and the closest to 3 points and the closest to 33 points split the pot. And these pots could get really big for us back then, like $50. You know, back then, when I was a freshman in college, a small Pizza Hut pizza was $1.50. No, it might have been $1.35, somewhere in there, and so was minimum wage. So a $50 pot was a really big deal. And what we would do, there was a way in this game, I'll try to make this real short, but there was a way in this game where you could take advantage of the other guy. So we settled it like Democrats. Here's what we settled on the rule. If you're behind, if you're $25 in the hole for the evening, you're allowed to take advantage of the other guy. But if you're way the hell ahead, if you're up $50 and you find yourself in that advantageous position, we use peer pressure to make the guys lessen his winnings because he was so far ahead, and since a flaw in this game was you could screw with the other guy. I suggest kind of the same thing would apply here. If this Mankiewicz guy, if he's a millionaire, if he's got plenty of money and his kids don't need anything, then yeah, I say, dude, you need to give up the ball. But I never heard of this guy, and I think the minimum salary for the major leaguers is either $100,000 or $200,000, something like that, so he's not poor by any means, but if his kids don't yet have their college paid for, I wouldn't mind the guy keeping it. I mean, someone on the field was going to be the last one to touch the ball. They say, why should he deserve it? Well, he was the guy, he touched the last ball. That was, you know, when the game was over, he had the ball. So there's kind of a musical chairs kind of precedent there, that possession being 9/10, whatever that cliche is, that he had the ball, and for someone else to say, no, that's mine, well, no, you got to stake a claim. My claim is I have it in my hand. Somehow they got to figure out what to do with the series-ending balls and what they should do. Why don't they make a rule in the off-season right now so this doesn't happen every damn year? You know, it's one thing. Let's say this is the first time this situation has come up. Yeah, it's okay to have a dilemma here, but let's not have a dilemma next year and next year and next year and next year. Why don't they this winter hammer out an agreement? Either the team gets the ball or the Hall of Fame, someone gets the ball, or they might decide whoever has the ball in their hand when the game's over, he gets to keep it. I mean, make it a... You know, because that pretty much could go either way. If it's a strikeout, the catcher gets it. If it's a fly ball, the outfielder gets it. If it's a double play, the second baseman gets it, however it ends up. If this guy needs the money, I say let him keep the ball. If his kid's college is taken care of and he's not ever going to need another dollar, go to the Hall of Fame. Or, third option, he can sell it to McDonald's or Taco Bell or Pepsi or Nike for $3-4 million and let Nike donate it to the Hall of Fame as a, you know, Christ, it's a commercial for him. Nike, they give $50 million to people like Tiger Woods who can't win a tournament. So if they're used to throwing away tens of millions of dollars on losers, yeah, why not go $3-4 million, put this ball in the Hall of Fame? Once again, Bart Kopp has the answer. I should be a judge.
Look at me, gotta be. Hard Cop Radio. Everybody's listening to it.